And welcome back to MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. Now, we've had quite a few tournaments over the last couple of weeks. I haven't been able to cover them all, unfortunately. I am doing this while I'm going to college and stuff like that, so it's a matter of when I can get them out and accumulate all the data in my free time between studying, all that good stuff. But that aside, I did manage to get quite a bit of stuff done for the podcast this week. First and foremost, I want to kind of go into Standard. For Standard right now, we have roughly about 10 different decks that are topping. We have Blue-Black Control, Timur Energy, Mardu Vehicles, Blue-White Approach, Sultai Energy Constrictor. You have two different variants of tokens, both being Black-White and Abzan tokens. You have Rakdos Aggro, Mono-Black Aggro, two different types of red decks in just a Mono-Red deck wins or Ramunap Red deck wins. And finally, hitting back with Constrictor, you have Golgari Constrictor. Now, all those decks are consistently just taking top 16, top 8 slots right now. In my opinion, what we're looking at, though, is the decks are slowly weeding themselves out between Tier 1 and Tier 2. The only control deck that's top tier to me right now is Blue-Black Control. I think this is just a superior version of Blue-White Approach. Overall, I do enjoy Blue-Black Control over the Approach deck. I think the Approach deck is a Tier 1.5. Borderline, it needs an additional push to make it to Tier 1, just for my sake. There are decks that are splashing for red to do Sunbird's Approach or Sunbird's something. Six drop enchantment, and it combos with Approach of the Second Sun fairly well. But even those decks right now aren't really up to snuff per se. So maybe with the release of Rivals of Ixalan, we'll see a little bit more control happen. We will lose both Amonkhet and Kaladesh upon rotation. But rotation won't happen for another couple of months, so we don't have to worry about that in the long run. But with Amonkhet and Kaladesh rotation, we do lose quite a bit of the control package. So right now, if you're looking to invest into something, you might want to look towards more of the aggro decks. I would say that Red Deck Wins is obviously one of the cheaper decks right now, but with the cycle of those two, red decks will have nothing left. They pretty much get wiped out with Amonkhet's rotation. So just keep that in mind. You have roughly about 6 more months or so to play with those, maybe about 8 depending on when rotation is official. I'm still kind of fuzzy on that myself. People have said it's going to rotate after the second set of Dominaria. Other people have said it's going to rotate after core hits. I know there's a little schematic somewhere, and I'm going to look that up after just to make sure we all understand this. Right now, it's just a big old cluster to me. But moving on, we do have at least 8 different aggro decks in format right now. I mentioned those earlier. And to me, the two top aggro decks are you have Timur Energy and Ramunap Red. I think those are solidly Tier 1 aggro decks. When you look at all the other aggro decks, we have Mardu Vehicles is making a comeback. Sultai Energy is still around. You have Rakdos Aggro, Mono Black Aggro. All those other decks are topping, but they're not being as consistent as, say, Red Deck Wins or Ramunap Red, whatever you want to call it, and Timur Energy. Most of the time, you're seeing Timur Energy, Blue Black Control, and Ramunap Red consistently in that top Tier 1 spot in Standard. At least they're showing up. So right now, I think our Tier 1 decks have been, as officially as last week, have finally been established as Timur Energy, Red Deck Wins, and Blue Black Control. I think those will be the three boogeymen for the format. Maybe some slight variations here or there, but I think those three are the decks that people need to start looking at to be prepared for. You do have Vehicles, again, as I mentioned, making a comeback, and that was the boogeyman of its day before a bunch of bannings happened, before rotation happened, and it's still a competitive deck. So it might still be something to look out for, but it's not per se something compared to Blue-Black Control, compared to Ramunap Red, compared to Timur Energy. I think those decks are the most consistent right now. I think there was a tournament where Timur Energy had 3 showings in top 8, and that's not including the several other Standard tournaments that we've had over this time. But that aside, it's still a young format that are decks that can make adjustments and further themselves along and make it into that Tier 1 status that we have with Blue-Black Control, Ramunap Red, Timur Energy. Those decks are consistent right now, but, and it's a big but, people are still coming out with decks. It's only 2-3 weeks in to the new Standard format. And granted, these decks, I believe, have now solidified themselves as the top. It doesn't mean that there can't be another top deck to make it in there. Approach the Second Sun's a Tier 1.5 to me. God Pharaoh's Gift's a solid Tier 2. You have Mono Black aggro, you have Rakdos aggro coming in at solid tier 1.5s. It just takes somebody to make that final adjustment for them to be all the way there, to me. And people, it could just be a matter of a great pilot. It could just be a matter of a slight variation in sideboard right now. There's still time for those decks to make it into tier 1 status. As I mentioned before on the show, currently I'm personally doing blue-black control or Dimir control, depending on what you want to call it. My variation seems to be doing rather well in FNM so far, rather well in playtesting so far with other people. I'm happy with the deck as it is. I'm still making a few adjustments here or there, but overall it seems rather solid, at least to me. I do think that there are some things that, for example, blue-black can improve on. I think there needs to be some bounce spells to just return permanents that you can't deal with, like enchantments and stuff like that, that don't turn into lands, obviously. There are just little things here or there that just need to be dealt with in blue-black control, and that's not to say that all decks can be made improved on. Timur Energy can be made improvements to. Red deck wins all sorts of decks, so it's just a matter of whether or not you want to try to make your variations work and how your variation does in major tournaments, say like at one of the Star City Games tournaments, Channel Fireball tournaments, or any other big tournaments that you want to take it to. Even at your local FNM, you make small adjustments to deal with the local meta. So just because one thing works for now or one thing doesn't work for now doesn't mean that it won't work in the future when you make the changes that are necessary for it. But that's my current thought on the standard environment right now. I think it's in a very healthy spot. You have several control decks out there. You have quite a few dozen aggro decks out there. And then you have, in theory, people say it's a control deck. I still think that Approach to the Second Song classifies itself as a combo. But it's that's just my thought on it. It's a self-contained combo. So, and again, it depends on what variant you run. But I did call it. I did say Wizards would allow a 7-drop combo piece in standard, and Approach of the Second Sun does seem to fit that bill, so I will take pride in calling that one just a little bit. Now, where I want to focus a lot on today actually is the modern environment. There has been a lot of shakeups in the modern environment recently, and granted, that's not because of a banning in modern or banning somewhere else that people suspected would happen. I had people say that there was a banning that was going to be taking place. Everyone thinks that Death Shadow is going to get banned. Everyone thinks that other cards in Modern are going to get banned. And right now, each format, I think, is at a healthy point. We don't need to ban anything currently. And I don't think there will be a banning, at least until Rivals comes out, because then that might occur and we'll see something that might need to get banned. But for now, every format, I think, is in a healthy spot. But that being said, like I mentioned before, Modern is in an incredibly healthy spot, and we're starting to see massive variants pop up, and old decks make a resurgence. Now, the first deck I want to talk about is something I mentioned earlier this year, and that's Merfolk. With Ixalan's release, Merfolk got an additional boost, a boost that it's kind of needed for a little while, and that's the additional Merfolk. So, the first heavy hitter that came out with Ixalan was Kapala, Warden of Waves. Now, if you don't know what that does, it's a 3-drop, 2-2, and whenever a Merfolk is targeted, your opponent has to pay an additional 2 to target it. 2 colorless, obviously, but so if they want to Lightning Bolt one of your Merfolk, they have to pay 3 to Lightning Bolt. So it doesn't feel good, is what I'm saying. If they want a Path or if they want a Fatal Push, they have to pay 3 for it. It effectively makes all targeting spells a Trinisphere, is what I'm saying. This would also go double for pump spells. I don't know why your opponent would pump your creatures, but if for whatever reason there's a benefit to that, that works for those as well. Now, Kapala kind of has replaced Kira the Great Glass Spinner in the main board. People are starting to move it to the side, so that's the first major improvement we see in Merfolk. So the next heavy hitter for Merfolk is Kumena's Speaker, and it's something that Merfolk's needed for a very long time. They've needed another 1-drop, and this is the 1-drop that they finally get, and it's not the best, but it definitely is something that the deck has long desired. So Kumena Speaker, if you don't know what it does, is again from Ixalan, 1 green, 1/1. As long as you control another island or another Merfolk, it becomes a 2/2 for 1. Right then off the bat, if you drop a Lord turn 2, this thing's a 3/3 and now is swinging for 3 on turn 2. So this is the desired card that Merfolk has wanted. Now if it was blue, mono blue would be even better, but Wizards decided to tone that down and force Merfolk to splash green just for this card. Now, there is another card that Merfolk is playing right now, and that's Merfolk Branchwalker. And that one's just a 2-drop, 2-1. When it enters play, you explore. When you explore, you either put a land card from the top of your deck into your hand, or you look at the top card, it's not a land card, so you mill, and then it gets an additional counter on it. This benefits from not having to have a lord to be a threat. At the same time, I feel like this was kind of just thrown into the Merfolk deck. Personally, I think that this card will get replaced upon Rivals of Ixalan. I think there's going to be a better 2-drop out of there that's just going to fit just a tad bit better than this. But I see why this is useful. It gives you information. It puts an additional land into your hand if you need it. And if you don't want the card on top of your deck, let's say it's an Aether Vial turn 4 for whatever reason, you generally don't want that, so maybe you want to mill that into your grave, put a counter on this thing, and start digging a little bit deeper for more lords or more answers. So with the addition of Kapala, Warden of Waves, Kumena's Speaker, and Merfolk Branchwalker, Merfolk has found itself new energy and is now starting to top a little bit more. It's pushed itself away from the tier 2 status that Merfolk has been for quite some time in Modern, and starting to work its way up towards a tier 1.5, almost a tier 1. If it consistently tops as it has been lately, I would consider it more along the lines of tier 1, but for right now I think it's a solid tier 1.5. You should expect to play against at least one Merfolk deck when in a major tournament. I'm not saying you necessarily have to have sideboard for it, because most decks I think are suited to go against Merfolk currently. But that being said, it's just something to keep in mind. Expect to at least play against one Merfolk deck. Another deck I want to kind of hit on is Infect, and that's a name I haven't mentioned, at least in the top 8 reference, in any tournament in quite some time. Infect kind of died when Git Probe was banned and people decided not to play it, thinking it's too slow. Well, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen Infect top 16, top 8 tournaments, and that's just for 2 weeks. I think people are still playing around with lists, realizing Infect's still a good list, especially in the meta we have for Modern right now. That being said, there haven't been any additions to Infect. Obviously, you can't add any creatures. There haven't been any new Infect creatures printed. I think that's almost exclusively a Mirrodin thing, or if for whatever reason the Phyrexias move off of Mirrodin and decide to go corrupt another plane, then we might see Infect come back. And then we might get even more Infect creatures. I believe that's like a 2 or a 3 on the Storm count. So we expect Infect back, folks. Eventually it will come back. But that being said, the deck's not running any new creatures. The deck's not running any new pump spells. It's not running any new removal. It's just an Infect build as is, and it's pumping for the win. So I don't know if Infect's just catching people off, or if it's still just one of those really good decks. I think it's a little bit of both. People don't expect Infect. They're not really prepared for it right now. It's catching people off, and Infect's still a good deck. Now, where I sit on the Infect thing is, I would love to see the Infect decks run op. It makes for the deck very well. Yes, you don't get information, but you get to scry one, dig for a pump spell if that's not what you want, put it to the bottom of the deck, draw a card. It's an instant, so you could fuel delve with it. It's instant, so you can hold up a blue mana for it if you need to and just scry stuff away that you don't want, especially if it's land. I think Opt is a very good place for Infect. It's obviously not the best substitute for Probe, but it works and fills the slot nicely. We have had 2 Infect decks top 8 or top 16 in the last couple of weeks, so just keep that in mind, that it's something you might want to pay attention to. I've actually put together my old Infect deck, and I'm currently testing out the Opt idea. I'm testing out little different builds I want to try, and I'll let you guys know in my local meta how Infect does or how Infect will do. Again, I'm planning on going to Oklahoma when that happens in December, and I'm looking forward to it. If Infect continuously does well for me, I think that's probably going to be the deck I play. And if it doesn't, I'll switch to Affinity, or I'll switch to something a bit more mainstream that I know works rather well. Now, it is important to note that I believe Infect has topped recently at 2 Star City events, and that's obviously Star City has its own thing, and Star City has its own meta, so that's also something to keep in mind. But that's just a note. I don't think it's top 8 on MTGO. I can't really say it's top 8 at a Channel Fireball to my knowledge yet, and that is the big key word there. But it's only a matter of time, I think, before we see Infect make a rather large comeback. And once Infect becomes in Standard once again, whether we go back to Mirrodin a third time, or we go to a new plane that the Phyrexians have found a way to, or have touched in the past that just so happens to have Infect, then by all means, I welcome it, because God knows Infect could use more variety than just blue-green. Now, I will say that I'm surprised that the top 8 lists did not use Botanical Sanctum per se. They're just using a bunch of fetch lands. They're using stuff like that. I'm personally a fan of using Botanical Sanctum, but I know why they did it. They're fueling Delve that way with more fetch lands. But with the meta as it currently is, I'm not 100% behind just using fetch lands to fuel Delve along with pump spells. I'd like to have Botanical Sanctum in there just for the better burn matchup and stuff like that. But that all comes down to variance and how you prefer to play the deck. Just because one person plays the deck one way doesn't necessarily mean you have to play it that way. It's recommended that you experiment with builds that you're comfortable with. You don't have to copy a pro's list word for word. Especially if you don't agree with one card. Let's say a pro list is running, I don't know, they're doing Dimir in Standard, and for whatever reason they're running a card that you don't feel is right, like Lost Legacy or something like that. It doesn't mean you can't replace it with a Kitesail Freebooter, or you can't replace it with another Duress or something like that. You don't have to copy a list from a pro word for word. Especially considering other people have already seen that list, and they're prepping their list against that pro's list. So they might even be prepared for your list already. Variance helps. Especially in Modern, especially in Standard, especially in Legacy. But that also kind of segues in right into the next deck I want to talk about, actually. The next two decks are Variance. And that's just something you got to keep in mind. Just because a deck's consistently top 8ing doesn't mean it's always going to be there. And these two decks are examples of that. And the first one I want to talk about is Green-Red Ponza. Now, if you're not familiar with the deck, it is effectively green-red. It's ramping into Primeval Titan, it's ramping into Inferno Titan. And the purpose of the deck is to ramp into these big creatures, all the while playing spells to destroy your lands to keep you down. So the green-red Ponza deck that I saw that top ran 21 lands. You're running 9 forests, 1 mountain, 3 stomping grounds, and then 4 Windswept Heath, 4 Wooded Foothill, just for the additional fetch and consistency. So it's kind of standard there. It ran 21 creatures. Arbor Elf, we've seen this in other green decks before, like Green Devotion and stuff like that, so it's no surprise. Birds of Paradise, just to block stuff and help to filter your mana, so you have 6 mana dorks off the bat. You're running Huntmaster of the Fells to gain life and as an additional threat. You're running 3 Inferno Titans in this deck. When it comes down, it's going to hit something, and when it swings, it's going to hit another something or hit face because of its bolt ability. And the fire breathing is just a nice thing on top of it. Obstinate Baloth is just there to gain life should your opponent run Thoughtseize or stuff like that. Because you're not going to have a hand a lot of the time. It's a quick, I'm going to lay down my hand deck. Pia and Kira Nilar, again, more removal. They come in with Thopters and it's just a great finisher. Stormbreath Dragon, we've seen this in Scred Red before. And Stormbreath Dragon making it into this list just shows you the strength of Stormbreath Dragon as a creature. Just protection from white makes Stormbreath insane. It can't be path. That's more than enough for me to play it. And whenever my opponent has more than enough cards in their hand, I'm going to make this thing monstrous, hit for more damage because of its ability, and then swing for 7. Stormbreath Dragon, all-star. If we go back to Theros, I hope they reprint this card in Standard. It's running a 1 of Thrund, the Last Troll, and I mentioned this on my last podcast that Settle the Wreckage deals with Thrund, and Settle the Wreckage will obviously deal with a lot of this deck as well. But Thrund is just another powerhouse that won't get reprinted anytime soon. Just a solid overall. If you have the mana up, he's unkillable. And then the last card in the deck is a 3 of Tireless Tracker, just for additional card draw. And then when you get threats late game, you can sacrifice clues, draw cards with the clues, if he survives, obviously, and then he becomes a threat. The package overall for the Green-Red Ponza deck is looking very solid. It's a lot of 4-drops, 4-drop intensive, but once you get beyond that slot, it's just easy sailing. So the instants and sorceries are as follows. You're running, and I'm sorry, I cannot pronounce this word for the life of me, but it's Mavali, I think? I'm just going to call it Acid Moss. It's a 4-drop sorcery. You destroy target land when you play it, and then you search your deck for a forest and put it into play tap. So the key word there is forest. It doesn't say basic forest, if I'm not mistaken, so you can get a Stomping Grounds if you want to and put it into play. Very good card, 25 cents right now, hard to find. It's running Primal Command, rather big surprise on that one, but it is running it as a 1 of in the deck. If you're not familiar with what Primal Command does, it's almost like Cryptic. It is a choose 2 command spell, so it's a 5-drop sorcery. The choose 2 options are target player gains 7 life, put non-creature permanent on top of an owner's library, or target player shuffles his or her graveyard into the library, or search your library for a creature card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So it's a search card, it's a pseudo-removal spell, It's a gain life card in the most dire of circumstances, or it's a shuffle effect. The shuffle effect you're really not going to use unless you're going up against Dredge for whatever reason. I don't see that happening. The 7 life is very useful, especially in the late game. But more often than not, I'm thinking they're using this to put a target permanent on top of their library, so they're going to effectively pseudo-wasteland something. I'm going to put a land that you have on the field on top of the library, or a planeswalker artifact, something that you get use out of, but now it's becoming annoying, or I want to time walk you, so that's up there. Or I'm going to search my deck for a Primeval Titan, Inferno Titan, something just to end the game. And those are typically the options with Primal Command. I think the command itself is at 86 cents right now. It's not going to see Cryptic Command prices, but it's just something that's there. And then the final card, instant and sorcery-wise in this deck, is Stone Rain, a card that we've seen many times before, and it's just another land hate card. It's a 3-drop sorcery, destroy target land. Plain and simple. It's partially the reason why this deck splashes red outside of Inferno Titan. It's just there to hate on more lands that you don't want to see. It deals with Tron very well. It deals with other cards you don't want to see. It'll deal with the flip lands should any of them make Modern from Ixalan. So it's a very good deck, and it's a very solid matchup, I would say, against Tron. The four other spells that this deck is utilizing are as follows. So it's using 4 of Blood Moon, so you're seeing that this deck as a whole is just hating on lands. If you're playing non-basic lands, then you're not going to have a good time against this deck, especially with a 4 of Blood Moon main. It's using 2 of Chandra, Torch of Defiance. It's just an additional 4-drop there to win the day if it needs it. It's using a 1 of Nissa, Voice of Zendikar. I think she's not expensive right now. She's right about at $4, give or take, 4, maybe 5. Not going to make a huge headway in Modern, but I'm investing into her a little bit. I got a couple of play sets already, just in case, for whatever reason, she spikes to Liliana prices. If she ever spikes to $70, I'm going to be in shock, but if she spikes to $20 or $30, I've already made my money back, so I'm not worried. And then the last card in this deck is Utopia Sprawls. And Utopia Sprawl, which I'm surprised hasn't seen a reprint in a long time, considering how many decks use it in Modern, but it is a 1-drop enchant forest. When it comes into play, choose a color. As long as you control the enchanted Utopia Sprawls, that forest can tap for any mana of your choice. Of the chosen color, at least. So if I choose blue, I can now play blue with Utopia Sprawls forever. Or I can tap the forest for green if I so choose. So it's not a bad card, especially for fixing purposes. The reason why this card is in the deck is additional acceleration. I'm running Arbor Elf in the deck, as I mentioned before. So now with Arbor Elf, I can untap that forest that has Utopia Sprawls on it and produce 2 mana of whatever I need, plus the additional mana, so it shoots you up to 3. You play the Blood Moon on turn 3. You play Tireless Tracker turn 3. There's a lot of things you can do with Utopia Sprawls. It's a very solid card. Sitting at $4 roughly, again, just like Nissa. She's hard to come by right now, as is Utopia Sprawl, so if you manage to find these cards, I'm not saying pick up 20 or 30, but I do recommend the pickup. I don't see Utopia Sprawls getting reprinted anytime soon, but who knows, maybe they'll print it in Ixalan for whatever reason, or there's other things that they could do. So the sideboard for the green-red Ponza deck is pretty basic. You're using Ancient Grudges as a 2 of just to deal with artifacts, so it's Hate Against Affinity. Anger of the Gods, just to hate against Affinity or hate against low-to-ground decks. Kitchen Finks to deal with Burn, and that's a 3 of, and if I forgot to mention, the Anger of the Gods is a 2 of. You're using an additional 1 of Obstinate Baloth to deal with Hand Disruption. You're using Relic of Progenitus to deal with Dredge and draw you a card if you need to, or it deals with other things that have flashback like Snapcaster Mage and so on and so forth. You're using a 1 of Shatterstorm again as a final thing to just to deal with Affinity because it's so rampant. And you're using a 2 of Trinity Sphere, or Trini Sphere, I'm sorry, a 2 of Trini Sphere. Now, if you're not familiar with that, it is a 3-drop that makes anything that costs less than 3 cost a minimum of 3 to play. So the typical example people use is, I play a Trini Sphere. Someone next turn untaps and decides to cast Ponder. That Ponder now costs 3 to pay rather than the 1. Or the same thing could be said for Preordain, Brainstorm, or in, let's say, Modern, you're using Fatal Push. That Fatal Push now costs 3 to play, or the Lightning Bolt now costs 3 to play. Now, what the Trini Sphere comes in against can be a multitude of things. I'm more or less thinking you're playing this maybe against Burn because they're not going to expect it. It's going to make their Burn spells cost a bit more. You're maybe playing this against Flash decks that have Snapcaster Mage in them. There's a multiple use for Trini Spheres in Modern. Now, it's not a huge sideboard card. I don't think Trini Spheres are too expensive right now. But as far as I know, this is the only deck that's playing it. So that being said, if you want to, I'd say go ahead and pick up Trini Spheres. It's not a must, though. But just keep that in mind that Trini Sphere is just out there, especially if you're playing low-to-the-ground decks. Like, the Trini Sphere alone kind of stops Infect dead in its tracks, because now all the creatures and pump spells cost a minimum of 3 to play. And that is if they get it out on turn 3. They can, in theory, get this out as early as turn 2, and the same thing can be said for Tireless Tracker, Blood Moon, so on and so forth. So the deck is there to stop you turn 2, in theory, or turn 3 at latest. All in all, it's a very hateful deck. Not as hateful as Hate Bears, but people will find this very annoying to play against. And if you have managed to play against the Green-Red Ponzo deck, please let me know what your thoughts were on it. I would love to hear thoughts on what the Green-Red Ponzo decks are currently doing against your deck. But that kind of also segues us into the next deck I really want to talk about, and that's seeing a lot of hype. One of my local shops that I go to, for whatever reason, I don't think the deck's great, especially if you were to play this against Green-Red Ponzo. Green-Red Ponzo will kind of stop this in its tracks, but that aside, it is five color humans. I'm not sure how I feel about this deck. I think this deck caught everyone just completely off guard, and no one was prepared for it. I think the deck needs something, but what that something is, I'm not sure. It needs removal. It needs removal in the not form of creature removal. Because to me, what stops this deck is a Torpor Orb or a Trini Sphere, because now all your creatures cost a minimum of 3 to play if you don't have an Aether Vial on the field. But that being said, let's have a look at the deck. So it uses 20 lands. Off the bat, it's going to use 4 Ancient Ziggurat for fixation, Cavern of Souls to say anti-counter and more fixation, and Unclaimed Territories as more fixation. Because it's running those 4 cards, the deck doesn't really need a lot of lands per se. Outside of those play sets, it's using a 3 of Windswept Heath just to filter and get stuff it needs. It's using 1 Plains, it's using 1 Temple Garden, 1 Hollowed Fountain. So the Windswept Heath is going to get each one of those if it can, and it's using 2 Horizon Canopies as additional draw mechanic if it should need it. And that's it. That's it, folks. So if you're running Path to Exile and you go up against the 5 color human deck, don't be afraid to path things, because they're running literally one basic. Same thing can be said for a Ghost Quarter. Don't be afraid to slam them down. They can't get anything outside of that one planes. If a Blood Moon hits, this deck almost auto scoops, from what I see. If it doesn't have Aether Vial out on the field already, it's going to be hard pressed to play anything. If it doesn't have that one planes out on the field, it will be hard pressed to play anything. But that being said, it's using a lot of creatures. It has a total of 36 creatures in the deck. It's using a 4 of Champion of the Paris, 1-drop, 1-1. Whenever a human comes into play, it gets an additional 1-1 counter on it. It's using Kitesail Freebooter from Ixalan. That's a duress on the stick. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a ruling on Kitesail Freebooter. It doesn't act as Tidehollow Sculler does, and doesn't act as other cards that do similar effects would. So, example is Tidehollow Sculler. When it comes into play, you get a non-land card out of their hand, it goes underneath Tidehollow Sculler. Now, typically, the old ruling with Tidehollow Sculler is if, for whatever reason, your opponent goes to kill it immediately before you select something, that card's exiled permanently. Or if you just blink it in response to choosing something, or before you choose something, that card's gone permanently. With Kitesail Freebooter, I had a judge tell me that when it comes into play, you get to duress something, and if they kill it, you get to look at their hand, but nothing's exiled. Or if you blink it, it goes back to their hand and nothing's exiled. So correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just what I've been told. I would love to hear a level 2 judges ruling on Kitesail Freebooter, or level 3 judges ruling on Kitesail Freebooter, just to clarify that mess. But that's what I was told. But back to the creatures list, it's using a 4 of Kitesail Freebooter, gets an instant or sorcery out of their hand, and it goes underneath, so you take some removal. It's using a 4 of Mantis Rider, just as a haste or flyer. Mantis Rider's an amazing card. It's using 3 Mare of Averbrook. It lords all your creatures, and oftentimes you're not casting stuff or using Aether Vial to do so, and if you're casting, you don't mind, because you want to keep that Mare of Averbrook flipped down. But for whatever reason, if it flips, you're going to get a really strong werewolf out of it. The next card it's using is 4 of Meddling Mage, just as a hate card. And if you're not familiar with Meddling Mage, it is a 2-drop, 1 blue, 1 white, 2-2. When it comes into play, name a non-land card, and that non-land card cannot be played. So typically, when Meddling Mage comes in, you're going to name something that you know your opponent's playing. So you're naming Path to Exile, Anger of the Gods, Sweltering Suns, Wrath of God, whatever you're playing against form of removal, or if they're running a lot of like hate or whatever, like let's say you're going up against a lantern control deck, you're going to name Ensnaring Bridge or something like that, just so they can't play it. And that being said, Meddling Mage is more than often than not the card that's probably going to win you the game, because now they have this dead card in their hand that they can't do anything with. You're also playing a Four of Noble Hierarch in this deck as a way to get in the good beats as more fixation, because Noble Hierarch effectively counts as a fourth land slot. So now you're playing kind of 24 lands. The exert is great, making your creatures stronger. You're running a 3 of Reflector Mage to say more hate. So typically you can go Reflector Mage, bounce a creature that's annoying back to their hand, play Meddling Mage, name that creature. My example would be drop Reflector Mage, bounce a Master of Aetherium back to Affinity's hand, drop a Meddling Mage, name Master of Aetherium. Now they can't ever play Master of Aetherium again. Now Master of Aetherium is a dead card in their hand. It's kind of a 2-for-1, but at the same time, it's one of those 2-for-1s that does not feel good in the slightest. They're also running a 4 of Thalia's Lieutenant, which pseudo-lords everything. It's going to pump every human on the field with a +1/+1 counter. If you have Champion of the Parish on the field, it's going to get 2 counters on it because of its own trigger and Thalia's Lieutenant's trigger. And then whenever you play another human after that, Thalia's Lieutenant's just going to get bigger. Finally, to kind of round out the creatures, it's running a 4 of Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, just as a hate bear. And that's the one where they can't cast non-creature spells unless they pay an additional 1 to cast a non-creature spell. And they're running a 2 of Thalia, Heretic Crusar, which is just a creature's interplay tapped and non-basic lands interplay tapped. So it's another hate creature. And now, as official ruling, you can play them both at the same time and not have to worry about things. And that's literally going to round out their main board creature package. The last card in this deck is a 4 of Aether Vial. And the Aether Vial is necessary for this deck, especially if it wants to flash things in, because now it's flashing Meddling Mage in turn 2, it's flashing Meddling Mage in whenever it wants, or it's flashing in Reflector Mage whenever it wants, or whatever card it needs at that given time, it's going to be flashed in because of Aether Vial. That being said, there are quite a few things that this deck is missing. If you notice, it's not running any form of removal. It's not running a lot of basics, so that's a way you can disrupt this deck as a whole. We want to look towards the sideboard right now, and the sideboard is literally, again, 15 creatures. It's running a 1 of Anaphens of the Foremost. This is going to just stop Dredge in its tracks. It's running Aethersworn Canidus, which is not a human, mind you, but it's a way to stop Storm. And it's a way to stop non-artifact decks, should the need arise. It's running a 2 of Fiendhunter just as a way to hit creatures. It's running Izzet Static Caster just as a way to deal with tokens. It deals with Affinity. It deals with a multitude of things. It'll deal with Infect if they so choose. It's running a 1 of Mirror and Crusader, again, just deals with Dredge, and Mirror and Crusader is just a great finisher. One more additional Reflector Mage should they need it. It's running 2 Tireless Trackers should they need to draw cards and have a late game threat. It's running a 2 of, again, gonna have a hard time pronouncing this name, but Vinith Renegades, I think. And that is just a way to deal with artifacts, just deals with Affinity, deals with Chalice if they need to deal with Chalice. And finally, it's running a 2 of Xanthrid Necromancer, and that's the one where if a creature you control dies, it produces a 2/2 zombie. So that's going to come in against a lot of hate decks that just have spot removal rather than massive board removal. I have a huge problem with this deck. I don't think this deck should be topping. I think this deck came out of nowhere. I don't think this deck will keep topping, especially if Blood Moon's a thing. This deck doesn't have a way to deal with Blood Moon. This deck doesn't have a way to deal with land hate. If you want to invest in this deck, outside of the Cavern of Souls, it's relatively cheap. I think the Cavern of Souls add almost an additional 200, 300 onto this, depending on what version you want to get and all that good stuff. And the Horizon Canopies, obviously, are getting reprinted next month because of Iconic Masters, but that's a different story. Overall, I do not like this deck. I don't recommend it, but you do you. If you want to run a 5-color human deck in Modern and just to see how it goes, be my guest. It seems like a very solid deck. I do think you'll get some games with it, especially if you curve out and especially if you get that Aether Vial turn 1 or get what you need to do turn 1. I think it can win games, but I think this might be the only time you see it top. I'm not going to complain. Ironically enough, for whatever reason, I own most of this in my jank binder. I think I'm literally just missing the Mares and the Manus Riders, and I'll have like the rest of this deck. One of the few things I'm not proud to mention, but that's the benefit of having a rather substantial Modern collection. You don't have to go out and invest in a lot of things. That's kind of what I wanted to go into this week anyways, is just looking at variants and how variants can take formats unexpectedly, make cards spike up in price that you didn't expect to spike. or bring in new cards to Modern, new decks to Modern that you didn't expect to be there. Next week, we will be focusing a bit more on Standard. I think that's when we'll see the top tier decks officially. After so long, the top tier decks will be there. We'll take a look again at Modern just to see if this variance keeps showing up. We'll see if Infect makes it showing even more so, or other decks that pop up from Ixalan keep showing up. A few more things before I go this week. First off, if you wanted to do the contest is officially over for the giveaway that I was holding. A winner has been found. I'm still working out some details with that person, and I don't want to mention their name quite yet until we have everything set in stone. So maybe pay attention to Twitter if you follow me on Twitter just for that. That's where I'll be announcing the giveaway. I am also starting a blog now. I'm still working out the details with my GoPro and a few other items that I'm using just to record myself. I'm messing around with that. So if you follow me on YouTube, MTG Eternities, you'll see blogs of me just doing stuff locally, collecting stuff for my Modern decks, playtesting, FNM, Modern, that sort of thing. Once I start going to major tournaments, I'll be posting more of that and who I'm going with, pro players that I know, pro players that I meet. If I just so happen to meet other YouTubers, other bloggers, I'll try to get them in on it. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, please do follow me on MTG Eternities on YouTube, or follow me on Twitter as well, at MTG Eternities. I'll be making announcements there. On a final note, I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on Green-Red Ponzo and Five Color Humans. Do you think they'll continue to play some Modern, or do you think they have a place in Modern? If not, let me know. Leave a comment down below on the blog, or leave a comment down below on the YouTube channel, on the podcast channel. Just let me know via Twitter, whatever. I'm always interested in hearing your guys' thoughts on how Modern's doing, how Standard's doing. It's always good to get more opinions, more variants, as I've mentioned before, just to compare notes, just to see if everyone's on the right page or if everyone has different opinions. It's always good to hear stuff like that, especially from you guys. So I'm going to go ahead and leave you guys with that this week. Just remember, all lines of thought are open for all Magic Seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.